point. Take the 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 point. All right, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to part two of the Take the Points Bowl Game Special Podcast. If you missed part one, I would urge you to go back and listen to that. That covers all of the bowl games up through December 30th. Of course, those have passed by now, but listen to the first 20 minutes of that show, and you'll get all of our great tips and tricks for betting on bowl games. Today, we're going to start on December 31st. Talk about the Tax Slayer Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl and the New Year's Six and playoff. I am Tom Zalesnak. I am joined by Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett in Phoenix, Arizona, via Skype. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Americas.
Fellas, before we start with the lines, anything you want to talk about from the last 2 weeks? We're recording this on December 29th, so some of the games we predicted haven't been played yet, but a handful of them have. Nothing super exciting, but what has stood out to you guys?
For me, I don't want to be a hater, but this really hasn't been a great bowl season. Usually you have some sort of exciting teams or some really crazy moments early, a Hail Mary, a crazy comeback, and not a lot of crazy action. A lot of low-scoring games. Louisiana Tech Navy was fun at 48-45. But, you know, a couple teams land some big eggs out there, you know, as usual. But overall, not really exciting first 2 weeks. But I think we're about to really hit our stride here with these last eight games we're going to talk about today. And also the games from the 30th, I think are going to be pretty good. So look for that. But I don't know. How about you guys? I know you guys liked them a little bit more than me. So what do you got?
Ryan?
Well, yeah. I mean, so far the games have been, like Dan said, nothing too crazy. I mean, we're used to seeing, I think we've been spoiled with some crazy, crazy games, you know, Bahama Bowls in the past and things like that, that have always something wild happens. But that just means that we're long overdue, and we might end up getting a run of four or five crazy games in a row. It happened. It's happened all the time. So I'm excited for that. We'll see what happens. But, you know, it was definitely cool to see some newer teams on the stage. You know, maybe it wasn't the greatest game or the most entertaining, but, you know, seeing teams like Old Dominion playing a bowl game, that was pretty cool. And it's something to keep an eye on for people like us who are always looking for an edge. We're looking for a good tip for early for next year, maybe something that Vegas isn't quite on. Some of these bowl games have been good for that. So that's kind of what I've been taking from these games so far, is just, you know, trying to get an idea of, you know, who's got what coming back next year and, you know, where we could maybe have an angle early in the season.
Next year, Take the Points 2017, we're going to focus on non-Power 5 conferences, high school football, FCS, and possibly some upstate New York middle school. We've decided. We've gotten bored with this Power 5 nonsense.
Yeah, fuck that.
For me, I agree. There was certainly no Bahamas Bowl finish. The Central Michigan Hail Mary, that is, of course. But there were a couple teams that I'd like to give some praise to, both from the Big Ten, which is the number one conference I watch and the best conference in football. Number one was Northwestern. They just, as we say this, it was one day ago, yesterday, I guess, they had a nice victory over Pitt, who I errantly picked Pittsburgh as my number one confidence pick on part one. And, you know, boy, I really blew that one. We all did. But great performance by Northwestern. I watched that whole game. They dominated time of possession. They had some nice interceptions when it mattered. They were able to get to knock Pitt's QB out of the game. So they did what they needed to do to win, and Pitt still almost came back and tied the game up, but great game by them. And the other team I want to commend is Minnesota. So again, none of us picked Minnesota. We all picked Washington State to dominate. That was another high confidence pick by me, I know, and by you guys. Minnesota, when we taped the last podcast, they were just announced the proposed boycott. And so we were thinking they might not even play. Like, word on the street was they were going to be replaced by Northern Illinois. after we taped a couple days later, I guess Minnesota's administrators met with some of the players who were proposing the boycott and sort of set them straight. And so much to the to compliment the players, they came out, they did another speech, they changed their position, and rightfully, yes. You know, under duress, they were forced to change their position, but it was in the end, it was the right thing. Like, them doing the boycott was a bad, bad decision, regardless of the guilt or innocence of the 10 players. Like, this is not the type of situation that you want to take lightly in this day and age. And so, good to them for reversing that and focusing on the bowl game. And then they played great in the game. They were extra fired up. And so, congrats on a win, congrats on doing the right thing. Other than that, no games really stood out. So, Dan, before we get into the new games that we haven't touched on yet, you have a new gambling strategy that you shared with me earlier, and I think we're going to discuss this so that people, as we go through the games, can think about this strategy and whether they'd like to apply it to their own degenerate gambling lives.
Thanks, Tom. This is obviously not mine. I read about this online about a week ago, and I've been tracking it. I've been now wagering on it a little bit. I actually just lost one while we're on live on air, which we'll talk about. But there's this weird kind of thing happening in college bowls the last 2 years where people have been making some pretty good coin on it. See if you can follow me on this one. What you do is every single bowl game, you wager one unit on the under in the first half. If it comes in, you just stop there. You win your one unit, and you go home happy. If you lose, you wager two units on the under in the second half, trying to recoup your money from the first half and make a profit. However, obviously the negative is if the over comes in the second half, it's a double whammy and you're negative three units. This strategy is now, thanks to a punt return to the two-yard line with a minute left and a touchdown, a third loss on the year due to South Florida, South Carolina, 39-39, minute to go, by the way. Good pick for South Carolina, plus 10.5 by all of us on the side. Anyway, there's now three losses this bowl year, which is high. There was only one full loss last year, which is crazy when you think how many bowl games there are. So every game but one, you would win, you know, one unit. So they made a ton of money last year. They were plus, whatever, 38 units or something like that. This year, Army was a loser that game because it went to overtime. This punt return with 1 minute to go, and there was also a pick six in the second half. This is another loss, and there was one more I can't remember off the top of my head. So, as you can see, it's very rare, and when it does seem to come in against you, you need a whole hell of a lot to happen. It made me think why this is, and I think it actually makes, you know, like a whole bunch of sense if you kind of think about it. College bowl games are, you know, as we talked about last podcast, a lot about motivation and focus. And in order to achieve an over, especially in a first half, like right off the bat after having a layover, or sorry, a layoff. Sorry, this isn't the civil layover.
It could be a layover and a layoff, depending where they're flying to.
Yes, valid point. Thank you for saving me, Tom. You know, so they're coming off of not playing from anywhere between, like, you know, 3 to 6 weeks or something like that. And you got to be highly motivated. Coaches are switching. People are sitting out for bowl games. There's injuries. There's academic issues. There's all kinds of nonsense. There's teams disappointed. There's teams, you know, there's a lot of reasons why overs are kind of hard to get if you kind of think about it. So moral of the story is people have been crushing it. I just wagered the under on Vatek, whoever they're playing.
Arkansas?
Coming up here. Arkansas, yes, thank you, in a second. And also the Colorado-Oklahoma State game. You know, both of them are kind of scary. You think, oh, they're over teams. But, well, come on, it's Vegas. So I got under 31 here in the first half. It's a lot of points. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you guys think it's just a fluke trend, or do you think there's some merit due to motivation, or do you think this is possible? You can kind of just sit back and make money this way.
No, I think what you said was right on, Dan. I mean, the motivation is definitely a huge factor. And then the other thing too is, you know, remember, this is college football. These coaches are all lunatics. They have like 16 coaches on staff, and they want to win the game. So they're, you know, super prepared. And that's why, you know, it's really hard to get a lot of touchdowns early in games when these teams, you know, have had, like you said, nothing to do but get ready for one game for five straight weeks. You know, it's really hard to get those scores. You know, it's not like they're playing every single week against the next team. So, you know, that's, I think, the other factor, too, is just, you know, these coaches are crazy. They have so many of them, and they're just super prepared for these games.
I love it.
I agree that it's not a fluke. I believe you said it before this current loss. It was 49-3 was the streak for this betting trend. Now 49-4. So to me, that's no fluke, and there must be a reason behind it. You don't get those kind of streaks in gambling ever. So what I'm thinking, this is just my personal opinion, having, you know, just found out about this maybe an hour ago. Two things. First off, teams are all jacked up to play in a bowl game. It's sort of like an NFL playoff game or the first game of a season or a huge game against your rival. You're all excited. The nerves are kicking in, and it's a lot easier for defensive players to play well in those circumstances than offense, which relies on timing and execution and being calm. It's better to be jacked up as a defender and just run around and smash someone in the face, as opposed to being a quarterback and being all jacked up, and then you're doing a Donovan McNabb throwing the ball straight into the ground 5 yards away. So I think that's, yes, oh yes. I think that is one of the main reasons. And then just the massive amounts of coaching changes, to me, that determines almost everything in bowl season, which is why it's so difficult to bet bowl season in general. So I just learned about it, but this is a trend I like, and I think I'm going to do it for the last remaining 8 to 10 games, depending on when we wrap up here and what kind of bets I can get in tonight. So I'm always a sucker for like a weird, trendy streak bet. We talked about my March Madness theorem of betting every single underdog. And yeah. Although it didn't do as well this year as it did last year, it still won me some money at the end of the day, so I'm going to give this a shot, and if it works well, then next year we all quit our jobs and just bet unders. So
I know, it's going to be great.
So just to reiterate for people who forgot or didn't get it, one unit on the first half under, which means, you know, like, let's say $10. If you win, you quit, and if you lose, you bet double, say $20 in this case, on the second half under. So do that, and Dan Partridge guarantees you win, or he'll pay your money back.
Yep. So.
You actually look pretty confident in that, even though I may have just cost you billions of dollars.
Who cares? Why not? I mean, I got nothing else going on.
All right, guys. Let's move into the games. Part two of our bowl game podcast. If you are listening to this now or tomorrow morning and you want to go back, you can listen to the games on the 30th in part one. You can listen to our tips in part one. We're just going to go straight into these games. Saturday, December 31st, the Tax Slayer Bowl, 11 a.m. Doris Burke, get her on the phone. She's got to announce this game. Georgia Tech and Kentucky. I picked Georgia Tech, but don't have a great feel. Dan, what's the most recent line, and what do you think?
Georgia Tech -3.5, total of 62. Kentucky's offense has been surprisingly feisty. Georgia Tech's one of the weirdest teams in college football. Seems like they either score like 50 points or like 12. And I don't know. Seems like that's true to me. I don't think Kentucky's defense is any good. So I'm going to lean an over here in a weird shootout. But no feel for either squad.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think Georgia Tech is definitely one of the weirder teams, the option. You know, I think, like you said, Kentucky's defense isn't great. However, it is still technically an SEC defense. And so that's why I think this game's going to be, you know, kind of a closer, lower scoring game, actually. And I'm going to go with Kentucky, actually.
All right. So split decision on take the points. I, as I said, picked Georgia Tech, but I have no strong feel on this. So let's move right along. Again, December 31st, the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl. Again, 11 a.m. They start them early on New Year's Eve. Got to clear the slate for the playoff games. So yep. LSU, Louisville, what do we think? Since our last podcast, Leonard Fournette made his announcement that he'll be sitting out this game. They do have a guy named Geis, the backup running back. Most people have probably seen him play at some point if you've watched LSU. He is, in my opinion, more than capable of handling the load. He's no Leonard Fournette, but he's damn good.
It's LSU running backs. They've all been good. Like, we're going like on 15 guys in a row, whether they make the NFL or not. They're all good. The offensive line's that good. Louisville is weird. I mean, you wouldn't guess that they'd be getting 3.5 from just about anyone outside of, like, you know, maybe the playoff teams this year. But Vegas loves LSU. They have them as the third best team in the country. I'm going to listen to Vegas. I'm going to take LSU minus the 3.5.
Ah, man, I'm going to have to agree with that. I definitely think that LSU, you know, they're going to be fine. Their defense is ridiculous. Lamar Jackson did win the Heisman, and I know he can put on a show. But at the same time, I think LSU's linebackers are just so fast sideline to sideline, and mostly because their corners are so willing to hit, and they seem that they really, really like coming up and making plays at the line of scrimmage. That's why I'm going to lean towards LSU, because I really think that their corners and their safeties can make plays, and that they will make a play.
All right, I am on board. Three for three for LSU from our podcast. I picked LSU. It's for the reasons that the two of you mentioned. So, Spillett, you talked about the defense. I think they're in a unique position where they're one of, say, five defenses in all of college football that are well-equipped to handle Lamar Jackson. So I'm not too worried about that. And then the running game, they'll be fine without Fournette. I don't know how you guys feel, but I don't think they really lose anything by losing Fournette. In terms of college football, obviously he's a better pro prospect. But they're fine without him.
No. And as you can see by the line, it opened at 3. It's now 3.5. It's not like it went down. They're not like, oh, Fournette's out. Well, advantage. No, it's LSU. I guarantee this guy runs for like 135 yards. Like, you know what? Screw bet on the game. Just bet the over on the rushing yards for this backup guy, because that's coming in. Please, someone send me a text and remind me. I will forget. Please.
So I don't think there's a huge – I don't think there's any drop-off in terms of this team. LSU stacked. I watched some LSU at the end of the season, and Fournette had reduced his workload already. He was sort of phasing himself, or the coaches were phasing him out of the offense and phasing this guy Geis in, and there didn't seem to be any sort of drop-off in terms of production. So – take LSU. I would not lay 3.5. If it were 2.5 or 3, I'd consider it, but I think we might be looking at a 3-point game. And just for the record, next year LSU gets Pitt's offensive coordinator. They'll have a good running back back. Hopefully they can do something with the quarterback position. I have faith in this offensive coordinator, more faith than I've had in this team going into a year in a long time. So I am hoping for good things from LSU next year, but we'll get to that in August.
Oh, you're going to be touching a lot of rope in August, Tom.
I am already – I've asked for a long rope that stretches out to January, and I've already begun to touch that rope and reel myself into LSU champion pick in 2017. But we're getting way, way ahead of ourselves. We're going to skip the playoff games. We're going to do the others, and then we'll get to the playoff games at the end. So, therefore, we move to January 2nd. This is Monday after New Year's. The Outback Bowl. The always awesome Outback Bowl. This is usually a good one because you usually have, like, the third team in the SEC matched up with, like, the third team in the Big Ten, and that's pretty good. But this year, the third team in the SEC is Florida, who can't score a point, and – because the Big Ten is so good and got so many teams into the New Year's Six, now you're down to like the sixth best team in the Big Ten. So you've got Iowa and Florida in, I would call, an underwhelming Outback Bowl.
It's not good, Tom. I heard things.
By the way, can I just point out that I believe in the first week of the season when Tennessee was ranked eighth, we predicted a Tennessee-Iowa Outback Bowl.
So close.
And we're so close, man. So close. We were one tornado away from having that happen.
We were like one less choke by Butch Jones away from having this happen. We were so close.
The lesson is do not trust in Butch Jones ever.
We told everyone, even when they were undefeated, like winning on Miracle Hail Marys at 6-0, we're like, don't worry, it's coming. And sure enough, it did.
I'm paraphrasing. We were like, they're ranked eighth. They look good. Everybody believes in them. And they got a very manageable schedule. So, Outback Bowl against Iowa.
Yep.
Close.
And they did worse. And they didn't make the Outback Bowl. All right. Anyway, this game sucks. Iowa's got a bunch of pro talent that you never have heard of, including maybe their quarterback. Florida, same as it ever was. They haven't had a quarterback since Tebow. Same old story. Over-under's 40.5. This could be an epic stinker. Watch the weather. Just give me a little rain, and this game's not getting into the 30s. So I would lean an under, but gun to my head, give me the SEC team, even though Florida may not show up whatsoever for this game. I'm terrified.
Okay, glad you said that, Dan, because I'm gonna go ahead and say Florida is not gonna show up. And the only other thing I need to contribute to this game is all you people who are just blown away by that first half, second half under streak. If you want to try to make up for lost time, go ahead and bet like 5 to 10 units on the first half under, and then bet another 5 to 10 units on the second half under. Just catch right up.
Both are going over.
Nope. Bet the house on both.
If you bet the over in this game in any half or for the game, your sportsbook account should just lock you out for like 2 weeks.
No, that just means that like you're related to someone on that plays on the offensive side of the ball. There's no other reason.
You know how they have like drunken phone apps where it's like, lock me out from texting certain people between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. That's like, so you don't accidentally text your ex-girlfriend drunk. If you try to bet the over in this, it should just pop up and be like, sorry, your bet has been blocked by take the points algorithm.
Right. Declined. I would say that Ryan is correct. And of all these eight games we're talking about, I'm looking at them now. Florida is most likely to completely mail in a game of all the teams coming up. I'm looking at it like, no. Circle Florida. Would it shock you if the final score was like 17-3 Iowa?
No.
Like, none. No one would care. Yeah. Move right on to next year. No one cares.
That would be a lot of points. But other than that. So my feeling, 3 weeks ago when I filled out a pool, I picked Florida in this game, and now I cannot for the life of me remember what my rationale was or why. I am going to change that pick live on the air here. Iowa to win the game.
Yeah, outright.
16-13.
There it is.
And Florida will be very interesting because a lot of teams travel long distances or they go to a nicer climate. Iowa, for example, going down to, where's this play? Tampa. Florida going from Gainesville to Tampa. That's like a lateral move. So I'm not sure if that hurts or helps them.
Hurts. They don't give a shit.
Nope.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, they don't even get a decent vacation out of it. So
nothing.
I'm going to also predict a Florida no-show.
No-show.
They'll turn it on at the very end. They'll be, I'm thinking they have 3 points at halftime, and then they score an astounding 10 points in the second half. So,
okay. 16-13
is my pick. But Vegas will adjust, so the second half over-under might be like 8.5, so watch out for that.
Six. 6 is what the total's going to be.
All right, here's a game I'm very interested in. The Goodyear Cotton Bowl, January 2nd, 1 p.m., ESPN. The Wisconsin Badgers take on the Western Michigan something or other.
Broncos.
I knew I was going to say Cowboys. I knew it was something with a horse. Man, I'm rusty. It's been too while. Been a while since we've done one of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. What do you got, Dan?
Well, this is your standard issue, Wisconsin in a BCS New Year's 6 game somehow. Like every year, they just weasel their way in there. Western Michigan will be highly motivated. Wisconsin is just the team who's just always motivated somehow, and they just are, you know, consistently steady. So there's no reason to kind of look for a blowout one way or the other outside of X's and O's. Opened at 7.5. It's risen to 8.5. Hate laying 8.5 with Wisconsin. Hate taking 8.5 with the Western Michigan squad. I'm going to take the over 52.5 and see if that comes in.
Okay. I was definitely pretty one of the more vocal people about I loved Western Michigan in this game a couple weeks ago. And unfortunately, the more time that passes, the more I talk myself into Wisconsin basically taking this game personally as a regional dominance type of thing. And then like Dan said, like there's no reason to ever question, is Wisconsin going to show up? Are they going to be motivated? They always do. They're super consistent for all our lives, basically. You know, so I think the more time that passes, the more I'm leaning towards Wisconsin, but the 8.5 is a little bit worrisome. You know, if I gun to my head, I probably would just stick with Western Michigan, but, you know, Wisconsin money line is probably the best. If you're going to have to bet the game, that's what I would bet.
So I have a possibly unique take on this. First off, the coaching. We talk about the coaching and what team will show up and what will be motivated. This is one game where I feel very good about two young-ish coaches. Paul Christ, I think, is a great coach. I've said this on a few podcasts this year, but I really like how he had Wisconsin playing all year. I think they played a little above their talent level. They outkicked their coverage, to use a phrase that we like. Western Michigan, we all know about PJ Fleck, future Notre Dame head coach PJ Fleck. I think it's pretty solidified now, right, that we've had these openings and everybody's moved around and PJ Fleck decided to just sit pat and play in this game. Is it safe to assume he'll be back for one more year before he moves on to the big time, i.e. yeah, Notre Dame or another similar big program?
Yeah, he's in a great spot. He gets to just chill. And next year, get his pick of a bunch of great jobs.
Because he could have gone to a Illinois or a Purdue or something like that, Indiana, this year and used that as a stepping stone for a few years from now. But seems like he's just going to wait one more year and then just make the big time leap, which
correct
is good for this game because it means he'll stick around for it. So good coaching. I do not expect any Bob Stoops-esque collapse by either of these teams. I think we'll get a tight game. I picked Western Michigan because what the hell? Like, they've impressed me throughout the year. Wisconsin, to me, is in a no-win situation here. They win the game and everybody says, oh, congrats on beating the MAC team. Like, you got the bad New Year's Six team. Great work. Like, even if they win by 30, everybody will just assume Western Michigan was overrated and didn't belong in this game. And if they lose, well, then they're, you know, they're Bob Stoops losing to the Boise Broncos. So, no win situation. I think that puts them in a tough spot. And, I picked Western Michigan. The main reason I picked them in my pool was sort of to, stand out. I thought it was a spot where maybe I could, if they did win, I could pick up some points on other people. So it was a bit of a gamble on my part. I don't really have a strong feel. I think Wisconsin's a great team and they'll probably win, but what the hell? I'm going with Western Michigan. The Rose Bowl. Here we go. Best bowl game, best non-playoff bowl game this year. Number 9, USC. Number 5, Penn State. My brother will be in attendance. He got his work to pay for his flight out there somehow. Very nice move on his part. This is a game that I'll obviously be watching, but even if I wasn't a Penn State fan, I'm very interested in this. This is the best bowl game, non-playoff. So, what do we got?
Awesome game. Southern Cal minus 7, total of 60. That's pretty much right on. But I should say that it's right on as what I think Vegas should put it out as. But
home game for USC.
Yeah, but it'll be half Penn State fans there. There's Pennsylvania people everywhere, and Penn State will travel huge. They've been waiting for a reason to travel, saving all their money. Love Penn State. They're on an absolute tear. Like, how could you wager against them at this point? They keep covering. They keep coming back. That Big Ten title game was crazy. They come back against a great Wisconsin team. I mean, Wisconsin's a top 8 team in the country, and Penn State's down, you know, 3 scores, and they're like, don't worry. Like, what Penn State team could have done that outside of, like, the 94 Penn State team come back from 3 touchdowns down? They're the only one. So I have full, ridiculous, teenage-level confidence in Penn State going here this week. Love Penn State. Will hammer them for a lot on Monday. I'll tell you that much. Penn State plus 7 all day.
Oh, I like it, Dan. I like where your head's at. The only thing I really can add to that is you know, we were talking earlier with LSU how, you know, even though they're, you know, what they're ranked lower and all that, and they're playing in a lower bowl game, the Vegas has them as like, you know, a top 5 team. And USC is the other one, you know, where USC, even though they're ranked 9, Vegas has them at like right in the same range, in that 3 or 4 range. And, you know, with how good of a story this Penn State story has been, it really hasn't been that much coverage. I've seen way more coverage about Sam Darnold and, you know, his future as the number 1 draft pick in the NFL. And, you know, that's one of those things that I worried that we'd get oversaturated with a Penn State feel-good story, and that might kind of lessen the game for them. But it's been the opposite. It's just no stories about Penn State and just a ton of puff pieces about USC. And, you know, that's another motivation for Penn State to win.
So I agree with everything that both of you have said. This is a great game because Penn State, number 5, arguably a playoff team, although, you know, we don't need to rehash old arguments. USC is another one. They lost the 3 games, but since Darnold's been playing, they've been, many people would consider them a top 4 team just based on talent alone. So you're talking about 2 teams that easily could have been in the playoff if, you know, one game or one thing shook a different way. I think this is a really tough matchup, and I picked USC. Of course, this was 3 weeks ago. I talked to our friend Sam the other day. Me and Ryan met up in Syracuse. We went out with our friend Sam, and we were talking about this game. And I said I never really had faith in Penn State until about the last 2 weeks of the season. They would keep winning. They never looked great at first. Even when they beat Ohio State, it seemed like a weird type of game. And yet they just kept winning, and they kept winning, and they kept winning. And at some point, that definitely means something. So if we're making a bet on this game, I'm taking Penn State with the 7 points. I picked USC to win it in my pool, but part of that is reverse psychology as a Penn State fan. I don't know, man. This is gonna be a game that comes down to the wire, but take the 7 points when you have the chance.
Absolutely.
The All-State Sugar Bowl. Speaking of big game, Bob Stoops, 8:30 p.m. ESPN, January 2nd, the Auburn Tigers, the Oklahoma Sooners. Dan, I know you have a lot of thoughts. Ryan, you know what? I know all of us have a lot of thoughts on this game.
All right. First of all, Tom, I'd like to compliment you on that little slogan there, big game, Bob Stoops, BGBS, which is a pretty good slogan when you think about it. Good job on that. So we got this Mixon story, you know, pretty bad. Everyone's seen the video, breaks the girl's jaw. You know, the worst argument is your standard everyone deserves a second chance argument. That's pretty stupid. The only reason he clearly gets a second chance, as we all know, is because he was a five-star recruit, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, we're not here to talk about punishment, and it's the same old story. It's why Lawrence Phillips got to do what he was allowed to do. And, you know, there are plenty of good redemption stories, and we're not going to get into all that. We're here to talk about lines. This line opened at 5 points for Oklahoma, and now it's 3. Auburn's not that good. They didn't really play a hard schedule at all this year. They were able to keep games close with a pretty good defense. I think the same thing will happen here. They'll be able to keep Oklahoma down a little bit in times, but their offense just won't be able to keep up. It's only a field goal. I really don't care about the mix and mojo. I'm still going to lay the 3 with Oklahoma and Bob Stoops.
Dan, you ignorant slut.
I know, it's bad.
I'm just going to roll. I'm rolling with Gus. I trust Gus. Like we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, coaches get a lot of time to prepare, you know, and that's all Gus has been doing. Meanwhile, Bob Stoops has spent all his time, you know, saying, trying to say the right thing 2.5 years late. You know, well, if, you know, if this story had happened today, you know, we would throw him off no matter what. But you saw the video way back when it happened. And Dan, I need to correct you. Didn't break her jaw. 4 places. You need to add that every time you talk about it. You have to say in 4 places.
Hard punch.
That is just, it's just too much for me to get over. I got to roll with Auburn. Take the points.
Well, guys, it's been 2 years. I mean, it was a different era. You know, now we have the iPhone 7. Back when this happened, we were only using the iPhone 6. Mm-hmm. So you have to judge it by the standards of the time, you know?
Well, if... Yeah.
I'm joking, of course. It's fucking horrible. There's no reason he should be on any team. I read an interesting article about Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin down at Florida Atlantic has just gotten a new recruit who also had a similar incident at Florida State. And Jimbo, they were contrasting how Bob Stoops handled the situation with Mixon versus this guy punched a girl, or I don't know if he punched her. I don't know the exact story. I think he punched her. Okay, I'm getting the head nod. So he also punched a girl, and Jimbo Fisher said, basically, get the fuck out of here. So those are the differences between like a coach who wants to win at all costs and a coach who wants to win at most costs, but not all. So, yes, Dan.
As a quick side note, we will be talking next year about every Florida Atlantic spread weekly on Take the Points for anyone interested. Between Kendall Briles being offensive coordinator and Lane being offensive coordinator and this kid coming in. And this week someone asked Lane a question. Hey Lane, what was the happiest you've ever seen Nick Saban? And his answer was, I don't remember ever seeing him happy. I only remember the ass chewings. It's going to be wild. Joey Swampwater is going to be up to no good next year, banging waitresses and interns and sophomores. It's going to be Florida Atlantic's either going to be up 49-0 or losing 49-0 at half every week. It's going to be a wild ride. Get ready for the weekly FAU segment. Well, we're gonna have it like sponsored by Bud Light or something like that.
Let me jump in because I was just going to say the Miller High Life hat that Lane wore after the 2015 championship game or the 2016 technically championship game, where he put on his High Life hat, he walked around and talked to people, and then missed the bus home from the game. He'll be wearing that hat on the sidelines, is my prediction. So it'll be the Florida Atlantic, the Florida Atlantic 5 minutes sponsored by Miller High Life, the champagne of beers.
Every week next year, we're gonna all of us have to do a little research on the FAU game and see who they're playing. And it's gonna be great.
Where is Florida Atlantic? Is that deep Florida or is that on the coast?
It's on the coast somewhere. I think south near Miami.
All right, so that's not Miller High Life territory.
I'll look it up.
Is it Pitbull territory or is it Miller High Life territory? Which Florida? Is it Pitbull, Florida? Miller High Life, Florida? Anyway, I'm going to go with Oklahoma against my better judgment. I think the talent disparity is there. Spill it. You can insult me now, and then I'll continue.
Tom, go ahead.
So the reason, three reasons I'm doing this. Number one, talent. Go ahead, Dan.
I'm sorry to interrupt. One more. I get really excited when we talk about Lane.
Well, we're going to talk about Lane in a minute, too.
FAU is in South Florida in one of the richest suburbs of Miami, north. You know it. Boca Raton, right on the ocean in Boca. That's where Lane is. This is going to be so good. FAU is next to... right next to the ocean, right next to Boca. That's right in between the two of them. It's like an 8-block radius. Oh, he's going to bang everybody. All of them.
All the senior citizens. So I retracted that. No Miller High Life hat. He'll be wearing the mesh, like, tennis visor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's my prediction. Or the, I don't know the name of it, but, like, the mesh hat that goes all the way around that senior citizens wear when they're playing like outdoor shuffleboard.
He will be wearing a visor on the sideline. The visor is 100% guaranteed. Sunglasses, visor.
Lane in Boca with Kendall Briles.
Briles with his flat brim.
Is it 2017 yet? Oh. I can't wait.
So next podcast, which will be our last podcast of the year, we'll talk about the championship game for like 5 minutes. Dan has a very special segment that we're going to tease people with. We're not going to tell you what it is, but it's a very, very special tribute to an era of college football that's coming to an end. And we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to in 2017. So there'll be more hot Lane Kiffin talk and some other teams. But my pick, Oklahoma, three reasons. Number one, talent disparity between these two teams. Number two, Oklahoma hasn't lost a game since September. They won their conference. They are, if we were in a playoff system that allowed all conference winners in, they'd be a playoff team. You know, under the Tom Zeleznik 8-team system, they'd be in. So you're talking about a conference champ. And then they lost last year. I'm blanking, but I believe they lost their bowl game last year, correct?
Yes, Clemson.
Yes. Right. Okay, the playoff game. So they lost in sort of an embarrassing fashion to Clemson. Not as embarrassing as Michigan State, but they didn't put in their best performance. And so I think Big Game Bob does tend to bounce back the year after he blows a big game. So I'm looking for a little bit of redemption out of Oklahoma. All right, fellas. Backtracking a little bit, but moving on to the biggest games of the season.
Yes.
The two championship games. So I've got to pull it up. I've got some music. What I'd like to do is... we'll start with the Peach Bowl. I'd like to just sort of talk about each team for a couple minutes and recap their season and what they did right and how they got into the playoff, what you think about them, and then we'll break down the actual game. So let's start with, of course, Mr. Saban and Mr. Lane Kiffin.
Turn it up.
There it is. All right, Dan, so recap Alabama's season for us. You know, what stood out from Alabama teams in the past?
All right, do you want a recap of the 2016 Alabama season, Tom?
A brief overview. You don't have to go game by game or anything.
Have you ever, like, rode in the highway, like, as the sun was going down in upstate New York in the summertime, and there were, like, mosquitoes on the road, and you were going 85 miles an hour, and you killed all the bugs, and they're all in your windshield?
Yes.
That's kind of like the Alabama season. It hasn't been fucking close. Texas A&M pissed them off and got a 1-point lead for about a minute in the third quarter. And since then, they've looked better than any team I've seen in... I'm trying to think what the last team that would scare the hell out of me worse than this team.
Nebraska 95? 94?
Oh, hold on. I'm not going that... okay. There's a lot of options here.
Kajana Carter, Penn State?
You know what I'm going to say is that the last pro-style team that I think could have beaten this Alabama squad might have been, like, maybe 2001 Miami, possibly, just because their defense was just like Alabama's, and it could be so low scoring that maybe some of those, you know, Andre Johnson, you know, Winslow-ish playmakers could have scored enough points to beat them. But I don't think there's a pro-style team, maybe outside of them, that could have that could beat Alabama. Maybe, and this is going to sound crazy, but maybe since, like, maybe since the 70s or 80s. Like, and I'm not qualifying the option Nebraska teams in 95, and I don't think that the run and gun Spurrier teams had a chance. Maybe Vince Young in Texas. I don't think the USC teams could have beat them at all. I don't think any of them could. But this Alabama team, I think, is possibly a top 3 to 5 team of all time. I don't know how you stack them up against, you know, traditional teams. Yeah, there you go, Tom.
What about Very Tim? Important. What about our man, Tim Tebow, 08?
I think this Alabama team would smash. I think that it's Miami 01 and then Nebraska 95, and then we're talking like 80s teams. And that's it. That's how good this team is. I don't think anyone else beats them. And I know where I'm talking about, you know, passing over Tebow and USC and Vince Young, and there's a lot of good teams, but I just watch this every week and I expect to see a crack, and there's no crack. Their offensive line blows everybody off the ball. They have like 8 good running backs. Their quarterback is a runner and a passer, does make mistakes. They got an NFL tight end. They got NFL wide receivers. Their whole defense is going to the NFL. Their head coach is a specialist of coaching players in the secondary, and they're just, like, unbelievable. Like, they're supposed to be the weak link of the team, and they score every week. Nick Saban hasn't lost to a pro-style offense since 2011, when they lost 9-6 to LSU in overtime, where the LSU offense never crossed the 50 on their own, where they benefited off 2 turnovers, or 1 turnover, 1 special teams, and kicked field goals. USC went to Washington a couple months ago and laid the wood to them. Clearly, Washington has flaws. Alabama will exploit all these flaws. I am insanely confident in this. Our good friend Mike Roberts, we were talking a couple nights ago. He would have been on tonight, but it's his birthday. Happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday, Mike. You come on next time.
Happy birthday, Mike.
The most confident I've ever seen him in his whole life was betting Alabama minus 14 over Notre Dame. And he said, this is even easier. And this is as easy as I've seen a bet in a couple of years in college football. And he's like, I really wish that I could put a significant amount of money on this game. And we started talking about it. And, you know, this line opened up at 15, went up to 16, and now it's down all the way to 13.5. I don't understand why. I don't understand. Maybe because people thought so much money came in on Alabama that Vegas is liable. Now they think it's going to be some shady shit. It's not going to matter. They're going to hammer them like 52-10. And that's my prediction. Hats off to Alabama. You're an unbelievable team. I see now for the first time watching college football, like watching these Alabama teams, what a true unbelievable team is. Like, they have no holes. Like those great Oregon Chip Kelly teams were offense, but the defense had holes and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, like, they just have a way of just beating teams down mentally that I've never seen before, where teams just shake their heads and quit. They make everybody quit. And I mean, it's one thing to play a team close in the fourth quarter and, you know, the game's over and you shake hands, you go, oh, that's good. But after these games are over, everyone's just like, I want to go home. Like, you can see it. It's hard to explain, but it's unprecedented. Hats off to Alabama. Enjoy the bloodbath. Get a cocktail. You're going to need it, Washington fans. That's all I got.
Ryan, you got anything else you want to add on top of that? I certainly don't.
No. Well done.
All right. Congrats, Danny. All right, so in that case, then, Ryan, I will throw it to you for our next team. You can sort of talk about their season.
Yeah.
Well.
All All right, so spill it. Tell us your thoughts on the 2016 Washington Huskies season.
Yeah, I don't have quite the glowing in detail recap here, but definitely, you know, I think I'm one of the guys who's always been a Chris Peterson fan from the very beginning, very early on in the Boise years. I've always been a huge cheerleader of his and always respected what he's done. You know, and I definitely like Washington being out here on the West Coast for the last 4.5 years. We have definitely watched a lot of their games. We watched them kind of go from the overhyped Jake Locker era, where everyone thought they were going to be the next team to knock off Oregon and Stanford and USC, and kind of, you know, that never happened. And then they kind of went to the dog tank and or whatever, you know what I mean? And then just kind of got better with Peterson, and that hire was phenomenal. And the season's been great. Their quarterback, Jake Browning, has had a phenomenal year. Just very, very, very few mistakes. Stats very reminiscent of peak Kellen Moore, and which I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Kellen Moore, a fellow lefty. You know, so I just think Washington this year is had a really good year. They put up a lot of points. They do have trouble with the pro style, like Dan said. If you kind of line up and go after him and try to hit him in the mouth, they tend to struggle a little bit with that. You know, I think that they have some serious playmakers at receiver, and it's going to come down to them. The only chance they have of keeping this game close is really they need their wide receivers to break some screen passes. You know, they're not going to get deep balls over the top. It's just not going to happen against this Alabama D. They're not going to break a long run, you know, between the tackles. So the only way that they're going to have only chance they have to get this close is really going to be, you know, their wideouts, which are super, super athletic. And, you know, that's what Peterson does. He's going to continue to recruit athletes. And I look forward to Washington in the future. Had a great year. It's unfortunately going to end really bad.
Yeah, I liked Washington all year. They have impressed me. Their offenses looked amazing. I think their defense, the times I've been able to watch them play when they're not at midnight Eastern time, their defense is what really impressed me. I thought they had a, you know, Pac-12 championship level defense and a playoff caliber defense to go along with that high powered offense. It's unfortunate they sort of now run into a Mack truck of an Alabama team that's just incredible, as Dan said. So I think in any other year, this is a team that could compete against teams for a championship game trip. But again, I'm not stupid enough to pick them over Alabama. What I would say is, here's what would have to happen in the unlikely scenario that Washington did hang with or beat Alabama. These are the things you'd need to look for early on. Number one, Jake Browning needs to get rid of the ball quickly, and he needs to make good decisions and no turnovers. And that's a lot to ask from a guy who's never been in a game this big. It's a lot to ask from anyone. You know, you have to probably do a lot of three-step hitches, quick slants, and just fire the ball and get it to your playmakers and let them make plays in space, although there probably won't be a ton of space. And don't make any dumb plays. We talk about Alabama every game this year. It seems like teams sort of hang with them for the first half, and then they score a touchdown, Hurts runs one in. Then all of a sudden, the defense scores, and now Alabama's up 33-13. Washington, if they want any chance of competing in this game, they cannot give up a defensive touchdown or even a big turnover that leads right to points. You know, you can't turn it over inside your own 25-yard line, for example. So they just have to – Browning will have to play the game of his life. The defense will have to use – they'll have to look at the LSU game. And although they don't have quite that much talent, they do have some talent. So maybe there are some cues they could learn from that game about at least containing Jalen Hurts for a little while. Make him throw the ball, try to stop the power run game. Although these are sort of wish list items. They're much more difficult to accomplish in reality. But those are the things I think they need to do in order to keep it close. As a degenerate gambler, I will absolutely lay the 13 points. No question in my mind. This is spoiling the next podcast a little, but I am in a college football pool. There's about 25 guys, and every single person in the pool, except for one guy, picked Alabama to win the championship game. The other guy picked Clemson, I think, just because what I described earlier with Western Michigan. He's like, well, fuck it. Everyone's going to pick Alabama. I'll just pick Clemson. And then if Clemson wins, I'm like, I got a pretty good chance at winning this whole thing. So I guess it's a good, like, contrarian strategy. But 24 out of 25 people picked Alabama to win it all. And all 25 picked Alabama to win this game. So I don't see... You have to be a brave, brave soul or like a person who grew up in the state of Washington in order to pick the Huskies. So anything else anyone wants to say? Gambling lines, over-unders, anything you'll look for or bet on?
No, I'm going to bet Alabama minus 13.5 within the next 24 hours. Big.
All right. Well, in that case, we move on to 7 p.m. ESPN, the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. Didn't think you'd be hearing this song in 2016, did you?
I love it.
All right. Danny P., you were the first one to do the whip and nay nay when that song came on, so you get to talk about Clemson first.
Well, thanks. I didn't know that was the qualifying aspect to go first, but I do appreciate it. Great game. Really great game. This is good enough to be a national title game if Alabama didn't exist. Really even game. Clemson has advantage at quarterback over Barrett. Both teams have playmakers on offense and defenses. Got to give a slight edge to Urban Meyer over Dabo in coaching. Not that I don't love Dabo, but Urban Meyer's one of the best. Ohio State minus 3, even money. Clemson plus 3, minus 120. I think Clemson is that sneaky team who is on a mission all year to win a national title. And it's like they're the most under the radar, like highly ranked team all year. It was so funny. Like they lost the title game last year, but they played a great game, and they've pretty much done everything they had to. I mean, they lost one game to Pitt, 43-42 in a crazy game that they gave away. But I'm going to take the points with Clemson. I think they're going to win outright. I think we're going to see a rematch. And I would love to see Alabama, Clemson next week. So I'll take Clemson in the points.
Ryan, anything you want to say about Clemson's season looking back?
I mean, it was definitely, Dan said, it was one of those kind of under the radar. I think it was one of those seasons where everybody kind of was trying to be contrarian and trying to get too cute with it because they didn't really look great as far as blowing teams out, but they just kept winning, you know, in different kinds of ways. And, you know, I think that's what got them, you know, to this point is that they had to win a couple games, you know, when they played bad on offense, a couple games when they played bad on defense, you know, had to win some games while losing the turnover battle, which is super hard to do. You know, it was almost like they were kind of challenging themselves to prepare for something like this. You know, and everyone just kept thinking, you know, they were going to lose, they're going to lose, they're going to lose. And Dan said one fluky loss, no big deal. Still won the conference. So, you know, good year for them. Not a great year statistically, but, you know, they still made it to the playoff, and I still think that I would prefer to take the points with them.
All right. Let's move along. I guess I will have to be the team that talks about the Ohio State Buckeyes. So here, if you notice with our songs, we've got Hang On Sloopy, which is like from the 50s or early 60s, and then you've got Sweet Home Alabama. And then you've got the two newer programs that have become better more relatively recently, early 90s, late 80s. They need a better song. Like 50 years from now, are we going to be listening to the Nay Nay when we talk about Clemson? No. And Washington, I just picked Pearl Jam, but that's not really affiliated with the school. So what I'm saying is, you know you're a big-time program when you have a song that goes along with your team. So if I'm Clemson, if I'm Washington, I'm getting a song right now. Like I'm just picking a Band of Horses song. If I'm Chris Peterson, I'm just making that our song. So that 20 years from now, we have our own song, and then we're considered a big-time program. Anyway, I'm going to defend Ohio State because I picked them in this game. And here are the reasons. Number one, well, let's talk about what I like about Ohio State first. JT Barrett, former Heisman, was he the runner-up? I can't remember if he was second or third, but almost won a Heisman Trophy, and then he got injured. He's been a great quarterback, a veteran quarterback, can throw, can run, smart player, can do a lot. He doesn't have the weapons he had the last couple of years, but their defense, which was very young, has been playing great all year and has been getting better and better. And Barrett's just made enough plays. They had a close game against Michigan, but Michigan is a playoff caliber team in any other year. And Penn State as well. You know, Penn State was their one loss, and that's a playoff caliber team in any other year. So this team hasn't really, their only one loss and their one game that they could have lost are against the number five and the number six team. So while they're ugly, they continue to win. In that way, Dan, they remind me of the, was it the 2011 UConn basketball team?
Oh, yeah.
You never actually thought they were good, but then that somehow they're just hoisting the national championship trophy, and you're like, how did that happen? It doesn't make any sense. They never look good in one game. That's Ohio State. I don't think they've really looked great in any game, excluding like Maryland and a couple crappy teams. But yep, they just keep getting the W's. And I think a lot of that has to do with the team being young and finally developing into something really good, to JT Barrett getting better as the year went on, and to Urban Meyer's coaching. So that's what I like about them. Clemson, man, I have two totally distinct thoughts on Clemson. Number one is what you said, Dan, that they're this sort of sneaky team that has been coasting all year. They lost to Pitt. They should have lost to NC State, but they've done enough to win, and they're just sort of like an NFL team who sort of bides their time and then turns it on in the playoffs. Like, the Patriots aren't always giving us their best performances when they play like the Jets in week 16, but as soon as you're in the playoffs, they turn it on. So part of me thinks that Clemson will do that, and they'll make the championship game, and they'll give Alabama a tough run. But I think a slightly bigger part of me thinks that Clemson is this year's version of the Jameis Winston 2013 or 2014 team, the first year of the playoff when Florida State was the national champion, the defending champion, and they came into the playoff. They had had tight games all year. They had won every game, but they never really looked good. And when they finally had to play a good team in Oregon, they just got totally exposed. So I don't think Ohio State is quite as good as Oregon, and I don't think Clemson is quite as shaky as that Florida State team, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see this year's Clemson sort of have a bunch of turnovers, play a sloppy game, and get semi-exposed by a more steady, a more reliable Ohio State team with, as you mentioned, slightly better coaching. So that's my pick. I think Clemson, I think all of their ills of the season finally catch up to them. They play a sloppy game, and I think Ohio State advances to the title game.
I agree.
All right, so Dan, you don't agree, Dan. You pick Clemson, right?
I agree about the comparison with the Florida State team. I thought about that too, but I don't know. I just got in my head, I'm taking Clemson. I don't love it, but I'll take the points.
If Clemson can win in this game, then I like them as much as I've liked any team facing against Alabama. I think they match up well. I actually think Clemson is the best matchup against Alabama if they're playing at their full potential. I think Ohio State is probably the second best matchup. So Alabama, although they're definitely the favorite, I do think they're going to have to earn it in the next game for sure. Ryan, who is your pick?
I'm going to take the points.
Who's your pick to win the game, though? Clemson?
Clemson. All right.
So we got two Clemsons and one Ohio State. And so it's split. In my pool I was in, I would say probably two-thirds picked Clemson and one-third picked Ohio State. So I'm a man of the people, and as a podcast, we will recommend Clemson. But personally, I'm going with the Buckeyes.
And let me just add also to any listeners out there who happen to be out in this West Coast region of the country, do yourself a favor. Go on StubHub and get a ticket. Go to this game. Tickets are available. Good seats are available. Dan and I are looking into it right now. There are, you know, end zone seats for about $100. So, you know, $58, I think we saw, Dan, was the cheapest to get you in the door. So if you got $60-$70 and you want to go and see a phenomenal game, come on out. Phoenix, it's nice. It's nice out here. Come out and enjoy a game.
I take it you two will make – we've talked about this before, but you guys will attempt to go to this game.
Yeah.
We're working out some New Year's Eve logistics, but we're getting there.
It's sort of, I wouldn't say once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, especially since you guys aren't really fans of either team, but it's too good to pass up. This kind of opportunity is not going to fall into your lap many times. Take advantage. All right, fellas, anything you want to add about any of those games, about anything else? If not, we have one important item we have to talk about, but...
Yeah? The floor is yours.
Okay. So... Next week, we'll be back with a championship game podcast, and that's when we'll sort of wrap up the season. The thing I want to talk about, though, that cannot wait, and we need Mr. Dan Partridge to weigh in on it, the UConn Huskies, the UConn Huskies football program. Oh, man, this is breaking news as of yesterday. So the great Randy Edsall coached them from, I believe, 1999 to 2010, or maybe it was 98. He had the one good season in UConn history where he led them. Just for our listeners, Ryan Spillett has disappeared off camera, and there's all I see is a middle finger sticking up.
Yeah.
So that might tip his hand, literally tip his hand toward what he's thinking about this. And I know, I don't know what Dan thinks, but I know he has some thoughts. So the great Randy Edsall led them to the Fiesta Bowl in 2010, which... We're not sure if it was a real game, a peyote hallucination, or a new world in Westworld. So, but there's a 1 in 3 chance it actually happened as a real live game that they went to the Fiesta Bowl. Since then, Randy Edsall left for a better job offer, which made UConn fans very unhappy, even though those same fans would quit their job for an extra $5,000. So they brought in the great Paul Pasqualoni, who, shocker, things didn't work out. And then they brought in handsome Bob Diaco from Notre Dame, who, despite his best efforts, was not able to get the team on a winning path. Now, they fired Bob Diaco. They hired Randy Edsall back. And so now I turn it over to UConn alum Dan Partridge for hot take.
It's unbelievable. Way to shoot for the stars, I guess you can say. Like, but let's get realistic here. This is the UConn Huskies. What's their absolute maximum ceiling here? Like, I guess it's possible they catch lightning in a bottle and they try to pull off like a Louisville-ish undefeated Houston undefeated season. But they have no chance ever to be good, so might as well just go back to Edsall. Worst case scenario, he also fails, but at least it gives you another 4 years of false hope. And you can do some replays of Fiesta Bowl and some of their NFL players. Whatever. It's just going to be more comedy. It's probably good for take the points. It's probably good for my, you know, overall health. So, you know, whatever. I'm happy with it. Looking forward to Edsall. It's going to be great.
Dan, that's a much more optimistic take than I was expecting.
Hey, man, I'm a UConn Husk. You know, this is what we do. We surprise everybody. Just when you think we're down and out, this is where we go on a run.
I was surprised, to say the least, to get the Randy Edsall retread. We talk about the retreads all the time on this show, these coaches who seem to just get hired over and over again. I will say, in fairness to UConn, I know that I believe their top choice was Penn State offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead, who passed on the lovely offer to be the UConn head coach so that he could stick around at Penn State. Probably a good call since Penn State has everyone coming back on offense. So I imagine they reached out to a couple other guys too, and so Edsall was not their first choice. In fact, I was thinking they probably held on to Bob Diaco for a long time and did some behind-the-scenes investigating just to see what they could get, if they could get anyone. Like, there was probably a good chance if they didn't get Edsall that Bob Diaco would still be the coach. So, listen, getting back with an ex, never a good idea. It reminds me of, like, if you have a friend who, like, gets back with their ex-girlfriend and they're like, remember 2010? We had a great year then. It's like, yeah, but you dated him for 13 years and the other 12 were terrible.
Yeah. He was abusive, you know, for the other 12, but those 2 years he was sober, it was pretty good. And UConn should have just hired Lane and we could have had Joey Snowshoes. It would have been great, but no.
So that's what I'm driving at. Now looking back, you see where some guys went. They could have had Lane Kiffin. What if they just threw, I don't know, $3 million at PJ Fleck? I know he'd probably say no, but why not give it a shot?
It's the UConn Huskies football. There is no hope. Like, best case scenario is we can, like, play in a bowl game, like, kind of in that week between Christmas and New Year's. Like, right now, this is our max. Our max is being sandwiched in between Arkansas, Va Tech, South Florida, South Carolina. Like, that's your max ceiling. So I think Edsall can get us there.
All right. Well, then we look forward to a lot of comedy in the 2017 season with Randy Edsall back at the helm. Ryan, is there anything you want to add before we wrap this one up? UConn or otherwise?
It looks like the Huskies got into a member berry patch.
So I finally watched, on your recommendation, I hadn't watched South Park in many, many years, and I finally watched this season where they talked about trolls in the election. I got to say, I had no idea South Park was still firing on all cylinders this way.
All cylinders.
Man, if you guys haven't seen that, if you're like me and I haven't watched South Park in probably, it's got to be close to 10 years. Man, this last season was really good, and it was all about the election, so it was sort of happening in real time. So I don't know if they wrote it multiple versions in advance and just like went with the one that happened, or they were just like writing it in real time. But
South Park writes every episode the actual week of. Like the episode comes out on Wednesday, and they start working like over the weekend. Like the crew works, and they
Sundays. They write on Sundays, and that's when they start.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they had one, I think it came out the day after Trump won, and they had their Trump-like character on the show won the election, and it mimicked real life, and this is coming out 24 hours after the election.
I'm sure they just worked overnight. Those guys are crazy, man. It's unbelievable what they do.
Yeah, I got to give a big recommendation to the last season of South Park. Really, really good.
The season before it might be maybe better, too.
I'll go back. I've been inspired to go
through the primaries and all that. This has been going on for a while.
I've been out of it. Perhaps I should listen to you guys when you tell me something 15 times in a row.
Yeah, thank you.
That might be the lesson. All right. Any tips, recommendations, things to look forward to over the next few days? We'll be back in about a week or so.
Enjoy the games. Don't drink and drive. Be safe.
Yep, just chill out, enjoy the games. It's a weird year with the New Year's on a weekend. We're almost there. Let's just get 2016 over with.
All right. On that less than optimistic note, we will end it. We'll see you next week for our National Championship Game podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Happy New Year's.